Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything for you. This is a podcast in which I shall discuss about animation. Simple as that, right? Nothing really too complicated. But specifically, it will talk about the latest news that happened this week. So, on today's episode, for example, I shall start things off with the comeback of an animation legend. Then we will be looking into two trailers of live-action films that are based on animated properties. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the Dam Keeper movie. Then afterwards, a special screening will occur that you guys are gonna for sure not want to miss. And finally, we have Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, to begin our story, let's go down to Japan. Now, normally when I would do these anime news, I would go a little bit later, like in the second half of the Animation Podcast, but this news apparently is just too big to the point that, like, it has to start things off right over here. Now, like I was saying before, okay, going into Japan, there was apparently a TV special going on, which in English is called The Man Who Is Not Done, and it basically chronicles what Hayao Miyazaki has been what he's been doing recently. And as we all know, after his retirement, that he made this huge press announcement, like, after the release of The Wind Rises, he decided, you know, he's going to lay low, and he's just gonna work on animated shorts made exclusively for the Ghibli Museum, which in this case, he is currently working on Boro the Caterpillar. So this TV special is just checking him out, how things are going, and a bit of the complications that he has working with the new technology, because anybody who has seen Kingdom of Dreams and Madness will know that Hayao Miyazaki said it best to describe himself, that he is a 20th century man who lives in the 21st century. So it's not easy for him to adapt to the new technologies that we could offer for him, and he's not necessarily the most patient man. However, he did reveal, sadly, that things are not going too well with Boro the Caterpillar. He's not that satisfied with it, and it might be until the next year that he could actually release the project, so he still has a bit of a long way to go. But that's not the news that we are talking, however. The biggest thing that we could take from this TV special is that Hayao Miyazaki revealed that pretty much screw the retirement thing, he's gonna go back making animated feature films. Well, not necessarily, well, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration per se, but well, what he has in mind is that after working a while on Boro the Caterpillar and not being happy with it, in late August, apparently he went to his producer Toshio Suzuki and suggested to go and create an animated feature film. And even though right now it is not greenlit, he is currently working on some storyboards. And if the project does end up being greenlit, which I'll admit it's probably highly likely, because who would say no to Hayao Miyazaki? If it is greenlit, the release date is pretty much predicted to be around either 2019, 2020, or 2021. But the according to my source here on Anime News Network, it did state that in the schedule listed in his proposal, Miyazaki suggested that the film could be done by 2019, before the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. And at this point, even Toshio Suzuki himself, he even commented that Miyazaki will draw the storyboards. He will draw storyboards until he dies. And another staffer dryly noted that this would make the movie a huge hit. Now, I'll be honest, when I saw this news, I was both excited and really annoyed at the same time. Now, I'll explain a bit. Okay, excited because it's the same reasons why everybody is pretty much excited. Holy crap, Hayao Miyazaki is going back, he's coming back to make another feature film. This is actually really exciting. I mean, we're talking about the same guy who made such legendary feature films, including Castle in the Sky, Porco Rosso, The Wind Rises, and especially Spirited Away. I mean, this dude is a living legend. So definitely hearing that there's going to be another feature film from him is absolutely exciting, no matter how you, pretty much how you see it. But there is the other side of me that is a bit annoyed by this. And I know that it seems weird that an exciting, this greatly exciting news shouldn't be something to be annoyed about. But for somehow for me, it really kind of is. Because the reason why this really does annoy me is that what the fridge is the big deal with his entire press announcement that he made 3 years ago saying that he retired? I mean, it really, seriously, why do we have, why did he make such a big freaking deal about it only to, just a few years later to be casually like, yeah, you know what, I'm just gonna go and make another movie. Yeah, screw this. Alright, I'm gonna go. You know, I don't know if this is, either the third or fourth time that he did it. He announced his retirement, and then he decided, oh, screw it, I'm gonna go back. I know that he did that after Princess Mononoke, and then went back with Spirited Away. And then afterwards, he retired after Spirited Away, and decided to go back with Howl's Moving Castle. And here he is again, doing the same thing, retired after The Wind Rises, and then coming back to this. Seriously. You could even hear it, with Toshio Suzuki. Even he's giving up on the whole situation. It's okay, you know what? Screw it. Guys, if you really want to know when Hayao Miyazaki is going to officially retire, it's going to be when he's freaking dead. And even at that point, I'm starting to really question it. I wouldn't even be surprised that after he passed away, somehow the studio, Studio Ghibli is going to be haunted, and you're just going to see a pencil floating around making freaking storyboards. It turns out, oh, looks like Miyazaki wants to make another movie again. Seriously, man, pick your freaking choice. I mean, there's another aspect why it actually does annoy me is because, and I guess this is a bit more in a personal level. It's actually because just this week, as I'm doing this animation podcast, is that I actually released a brand new top 10 called the Top 10 Documentaries on Animation. And spoiler alert, one of them that I included was The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness. And I kind of build it up a bit that Hayao Miyazaki, the big significance about The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness is that it chronicles the story of Hayao Miyazaki as he is making his final feature film with The Wind Rises. I guess that doesn't have a point anymore. I don't know, in a way, I guess you kind of less, it makes the value a bit less on that feature film, because now people are just going to watch that documentary and, they're going to see the ending going, yeah, that's a bunch of malarkey. I mean, seriously, man, if you're going to retire, then actually freaking mean it. But you know, as I stated before, considering this is, either his third or fourth time that he's pretty much doing this, a lot of people are not surprised. And the worst thing is that I remember back during those 3 years ago, when people when Hayao Miyazaki announced his retirement after The Wind Rises, there are people who legitimately told me, he'll be back. I'm not buying that crap. Just wait a few years and he'll be back. Well, guess what? Yeah, it turns out they were right. The thing is, many anime fans and Studio Ghibli fans, they've went through this already. So they're not surprised that this is pretty much happening. But still, there is that aspect that everybody is excited that Hayao Miyazaki is actually going to come back and make another feature film. And I'll be honest with you guys, the reason why I bought it in the first place during that time a few years ago was actually because of his age. I mean, keep in mind, guys, like, Hayao Miyazaki is in his mid-70s now. And even when he announced his retirement, he was in his early 70s. So it's kind of an understandable excuse that, you know, he's retiring because he's getting old. And, like, and you know, like, there are many animators that did end up retiring. I mean, if you look at the Nine Old Men, like, they didn't animate until they die. Like, they would just keep on going. I mean, yeah, sure, there's, like, there's Joe Grant. But, yeah, like most of the time, you would find animators retiring. And I thought Hayao Miyazaki would be one of them, but nope. It looks like he still wants to continue making more animated feature films. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Hayao Miyazaki would actually be the kind of person that would actually die by, the moment he would die is when he would continuously work on his feature film. Like, this is going to be the kind of death where he's going to be lying down on his desk with a pencil in his hand while making another feature film. That could be one hell of a way to go. I mean, like, that would be, like, true devotion to animation. So, yeah, like, that's kind of the big thing. But actually, that's not the only thing, though. There is another aspect that actually does legitimately annoy me, to be honest. And this, like, okay, I understand that the aspect of Hayao Miyazaki coming back out of retirement is a bit silly. And, it is a bit of, like, kind of a goofy kind of thing to be annoyed, but, you know, in the end, I actually am excited about it. But there is something about this news that is legitimately annoying me. And it's not, I'm not saying it's the news itself, it's how the media everywhere is pretty much telling their own story. And what annoys me there is that when you look at different websites, like, whether it be Anime News Network, or Cartoon Brew, or Variety, or The Hollywood Reporter, or Deadline, or any of those things, it gets really annoying the many different interpretations that go into this. I mean, the reason why I picked Anime News Network is because they were the first to immediately report this. Like, they knew where the source is. They knew, watching from the TV special of The Man Who Is Not Done, that they would go and report this news. Like, they got it directly. They know what they're doing. But then when you look at the other stuff, like freaking Variety or Deadline and stuff like that, they would spin it into many different things. I've heard reports that, like, people are, like, some people are even saying that the feature film is gonna be Boro the Caterpillar, that his next feature film is gonna be CG animation or all that kind of stuff, and even the release date is so inconsistent. Like, in the whole, like, in Anime News Network, right over here, my source says that the proposal says that it could be possible they'll be done before the 2020 Olympics. That's a bit of a prediction. But some people are legitimately stating that, oh, now that he's out of retirement, his next movie is going to be coming out in 2019, or in 2020, or in 2021. Like, it gets annoying, man. Like, there's such a, like, this massive inconsistency that, like, you don't know where to believe. And, like, if you just rely on those big news sites, then it honestly kind of gets annoying. But, like I said before, this is why I picked Anime News Network as my full-on source. Now, usually, like, with stuff like Variety and Deadline and The Hollywood Reporter, usually they would do a good job at just telling the news as it is. But the thing is, this is from Japan, so they're not gonna get, they're not gonna get the source directly. So that's why I trust Anime News Network on this more than any of those websites, seriously. It's just, it's going all over the place. But, however, I just want to say, though, that overall, like, when you look at the big picture of Miyazaki coming back to try to make another animated feature film, it definitely is exciting. It definitely is exciting news. I'm excited, and I'm sure many other people are excited. Like, even though, Like, it's not going to be for another few years, but at least we will have something to be excited for in the following years, whether it be 2019, 2020, or 2021. Like, you know, like, we could be excited for something else other than Trump getting the hell out of office or something like that. Well, that is if he doesn't get freaking impeached in the first place. But anyways, yeah, so the big story is that Hayao Miyazaki could be coming back. And, yeah, we can't wait to see what else he has in store. Now, going on to our next story, we actually got a double trailer talk right over here. And funny enough, these two are not animated features. These two are actually live action films. However, the reason why I am talking about them is because they are both based on an animated property. One is actually based on a Disney classic that just turned 25 years old. And another is actually, it started off as a manga, but then it spun off as an animated feature film, which many people state it's one of the best non-Studio Ghibli Japanese animated feature films next to Akira. Like, really that amazing. And you could definitely see in that movie, like, there are some influences right there. However, what's actually very coincidental is that not only are they very similar that they're based on an animated property, but also that they would both be released on March 2017. And I am talking, of course, about Beauty and the Beast and Ghost in the Shell. And so let me just start things off by looking at them individually, and then I'm going to go and make some comparisons and see which one I would actually prefer, or which one am I actually more excited for. So let's begin alphabetically, and let's take a look into Beauty and the Beast. And it's actually interesting to note that apparently this trailer of Beauty and the Beast actually broke a brand new record for being the most viewed trailer within 24 hours. I believe it's like 114 million views in total, or 117 million, around those numbers. But the big thing is that, like, it beat that record, and it pretty much surpassed the numbers of, or maybe it's in, like, more than 120-something, actually. Now come to think of it. But anyways, the big picture is that it surpassed the records of movies like Star Wars The Force Awakens and 50 Shades Darker. So yeah, you could definitely tell that the hype is real when it comes to this movie. But looking into Beauty and the Beast now, by the way, I also want to mention, though, that I have been a bit more outspoken regarding my thoughts so far on this live-action reboot. And as someone who absolutely adores the 1991 animated feature and would actually I would actually consider it one of the greatest animated features of all time, not just of Disney, but, like, ever, honestly, I am showing my doubts. And I knew as a fact, not as an opinion, as a fact, that there is no way that this live-action reboot can ever get up to the same levels as the animated feature film. And I remember when I saw the first images, when you actually fully see the characters, like, I expressed a lot of doubts on it. Like, I wasn't too sure if they would actually, you know, if they really do look that good. Like, when you see the Beast, or when you see Gaston, or when you see some of the smaller characters like Cogsworth, Lumiere, Mrs. Potts, and I think Babette or something like that. But yeah, you get the picture. Like, I wasn't really too enthusiastic about this film. And then I saw the trailer. And so far, I have to say that after looking at this trailer, I would say that, you know, it's going to be good. But that's all, you know, honestly, that's all I could say. It's like, it's good. I'm not expecting great things on it, but, you know, like, I am seeing the possibilities that it's not gonna suck. That's the biggest thing that I took from it. And let me start things off by discussing about what is good on it. And I think we can all agree the best thing that can ever come out of this is hands down the soundtrack. It is absolutely amazing. Like, you actually got a bit more of this epic version of Beauty and the Beast. Although I highly doubt that, like, you would actually get that in the movie itself. It's kind of like in the Maleficent trailer, where you kind of like got this grandiose epic version of Once Upon a Dream. Like, you know the one I'm talking about. Like, after you got that little Lana Del Rey bit, like, you actually got this, like, epic, like, you know, like, that part. Like, it really is awesome, but unfortunately, that was not presented in the feature film. So, unfortunately, that might not be there. But the one thing I absolutely adored in this is, hands down, the prologue. Like, that little piano riff, it's like, I hear it, and I have this desperate need to put, like, just to get that piece of music alone and put that onto my, like, on my soundtrack, not my soundtrack, but I mean, like, on my iTunes and stuff like that. I really want that piece of music. It really is that awesome. So, the music, it definitely is going to be a big selling point, and I'm pretty excited. And considering that this is a musical, who knows? Maybe they can actually make some pretty good new versions of songs like Be Our Guest or Beauty and the Beast or Gaston or stuff like that. So that's actually going to be pretty interesting to watch. Also, another thing, of course, this was already proven on... this was already been proven in the teaser trailer a while back, but also the sets look amazing. Like, when you go around Beast Castle, that actually looks really awesome. But the new thing that I got in this that actually really did impress me was actually some of the acting. There are some actors in here that, you know, like, with now that I see the execution and not just, like, the images and stuff like that, I'm pretty convinced, you know, there are some that I'm pretty convinced that they can actually pull it off well. Like, even though we only got, like, a few seconds worth, you know, honestly, I am intrigued to see more of, like, what they can do. Like, honestly, Luke Evans is not that bad. You know, like, I can, like, even though he doesn't have the same muscles as Gaston, like, I could see a bit in his acting in there, like, when he was just there, like, I say we kill the beast! So, like, there is that. And also, one that really did surprise me was probably Emma Thompson as Mrs. Potts. On, like, I was surprised to hear that she really got, like, kind of the spirit of Angela Lansbury in the original animated feature. So, she actually really captured that well, which honestly threw me off, but wow, that's actually surprisingly pretty good. And I'm still really convinced that the best casting choice that they have ever done is adding in Josh Gad as LeFou. That, like, that is just pure genius right there. And honestly, I'm actually impressed with Dan Stevens as the Beast. Like, in terms of his execution, like, his contribution onto the character, it's actually not that bad. That I will give it to him, that kind of like with Emma Thompson as Mrs. Potts, Dan Stevens actually does capture a bit of the spirit of Robbie Benson when he played the Beast. So, like, I'm definitely going to give it to him that, you know, it is, like, I am actually pretty impressed by what he can deliver, at least with what he gave me in the trailer. However, not everything in here is telling me that this is going to be great. There are some things that are a pretty bad selling point that I'm just there like, no. And one thing I just got to mention, my God, does the CGI look like freaking crap. Like, no matter, like, honestly, when you look at the, when you look at the objects coming to life, they suck. Honestly, they really do look like crap. And I mean, like, you got, like, rather it be, like, with the teacups with Chip, or, like, when you see Mrs. Potts, or even when you see Lumiere, it's just, like, yeah, you could tell that this is just crappy CGI. There's nothing in there that convinces me that, you know, that Belle is actually interacting with these characters. This still tells me that they're just CG characters. It's not like in The Jungle Book, where I am convinced that Mowgli is actually with these animals, even though they're CG, you know? Like, this one, the CG is not fooling me. Like, this is total legit CG, you are not there. And I guess, like, this is one of the massive disadvantages of adapting Beauty and the Beast, because no matter what, like when you're making Beauty and the Beast, like as an animated film, it's easy to convince people that like everything is in the same environment. Rather it be the human characters like Belle and the villagers and the living objects like Lumiere and Cogsworth. In here, it just really doesn't work that well. And plus the fact that the execution on the CG, it really doesn't work out. And then you also, but speaking of bad CG, then you have the frickin' Beast. Oh my god, who the fridge designed that thing and thought that it was a good idea? Now, I've already stated that technically, yes, I said that Dan Stevens did a really good job on his part. But again, that's on his contribution to the movie. But when it comes to the artists and the designers and the people working on the special effects to, you know, to bring Beast to life, holy crap, this really sucks. This looks like, it looks like freaking crap. And honestly, like, there is no way anybody can look at this and think that this is Disney's Beast. Because if anything, he looks like a freaking pretty boy. Like, this is not the Beast. This is a freaking pretty boy. You can still see, like, this is a lot more human than it is animal and stuff like that. And you know the worst thing, the absolute worst thing about the design is that it kind of destroys the moral that the original tale of Beauty and the Beast would deliver. Because think about it. Every single adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, whether it be good or bad, like, they would portray the Beast as this hideous, frightening monster. And this is supposed to push in the moral that beauty is skin deep. It's not on the outside that defines someone's beauty. It's on the inside. And like with this, like if you're going to bring in a lot of beauty on the outside, like, you know, you might as well, this is just pointless, honestly. That's like if you take that Prince Adam from the animated version, and like, you know, like right at the end, like when he first reveals his human form and it reveals that, holy crap, it's Brendan Fraser. Like, you know, like when he reveals himself, like, you know, just add in a bit of hair, just make him more rugged, and that's pretty much what you get. Like, it's just a more hairier version of a person. And honestly, it really does suck because, you know, it really doesn't convince me that this is the Beast. Like, holy crap. But, oh my god. But then there is the worst thing. You know, honestly, I could probably give the CGI a pass because some of the acting is actually well executed. Like, I can give the objects a pass. I could give the Beast a pass. But there's just one thing that completely destroys this thing. That completely disillusions my reality, like completely disillusions this film, believing that this is the new version of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. And that thing that ruins it for me is Emma Watson as Belle. If there's anything that this trailer proved to me, like cemented, is that Emma Watson as Belle is a terrible casting choice. And even in here, she's not even trying to act. She's not even trying to be Belle. This is just freaking Emma Watson as Emma Watson. Never once in this trailer am I really convinced that this is the new version of Belle. This is just Emma Watson being freaking Emma Watson. And like I might have said this before, because that, you know, Belle is a major bookworm, it's going to make it worse for Emma Watson because now we're going to see more of Hermione than we would actually see of Belle. Seriously, what kind of stupid casting choice is this? Oh, because I don't care if Emma Watson is like the internet sweetheart and everybody loves her. And I'm not saying that she is a bad actress. I do appreciate Emma Watson. You know, she did a phenomenal performance throughout her entire career in the Harry Potter films. But this, no. There's no way that you can convince me that this is freaking Belle. There's just no way. But anyways, that's pretty much what I have to say in Beauty and the Beast. Let's just move on to the next trailer that we have, which is Ghost in the Shell. And when we look upon this, the one thing, like the first thing that I do notice within the trailer is that I could definitely tell that they want to keep, like, they really want to adapt the story and be respectful to it. And that's probably, by the way, this is actually another good trait that I want to give to Beauty and the Beast, is that at the very least, the writing is actually pretty decent. Like, you could tell that it wants to be faithful to the animated feature and sprinkle in some of the classic fairy tale. That I'll give major props that, you know, the writing is actually pretty good, and it doesn't do anything stupid like in Maleficent, where you would take the animated feature film and like just go crazy and add in like some really stupid elements that like just completely ruins the movie. So I'll give Beauty and the Beast that the writing does look like it's going to be respectful. But also going back into Ghost in the Shell, that too looks like it's going to be respectful to both the manga and the animated feature. And the reason why I am comparing it more to the 1995 movie is because, especially in the beginning, you can definitely see some shots that are very reminiscent to the start of the movie, where you actually got Motoko up in the skyscraper, and like she's about to go investigating on what's going on inside a building. So she would take off her clothes, you know, she would fall down, and then she would go through a window, and like some action is going to happen. And they do recreate those scenes very, very well, I might add. It's actually really, really awesome. And not only that, but there's also another element that I saw that really does respect the manga and the animated film well, is there's actually one scene where like she's in the middle of the city, she's downtown, and there's a bit of water going on, and like she's pretty much kicking someone's butt while she's invisible. And then like you would see at the end, she would go and do a pose just like what they did in the source, like in what it was based on. So that I gotta give major props that I can tell that the director, the writer, and the crew is really pushing it to be highly respectful to the source material. And that, I will admit, I got high respect for. I really do enjoy that. But on top of that, you also get to see a lot more of the actors in action. This is actually the first time that we actually see Pilo Asbeck as Batao. And honestly, even though in terms of the face structure, it doesn't completely look like him, you could definitely do see some of the familiarity. And even I kind of like, went in a fanboy kind of joy when I actually first saw Batao, and it's like, oh my god, it's so cool! You know, like that I was pretty excited for. And also, Scarlett Johansson. And even though, oh boy, okay, I understand that there is a bit of controversy with her when it comes to her casting, and everybody is pretty much suggesting, like, pretty much, there are many people out there who really are pissed off of her her choice, and pretty much accusing this movie of, like, oh my god, this is total whitewashing and stuff like that. But honestly, here's the thing. I do understand a little bit why people are accusing it of whitewashing, where, like, technically this is a bit of a Japan kind of setting, where, like, the environment is supposed to be, like, this Neo-Japan in a way, and you actually see, it's very Japanese influence, and many of the actors in there are actually Japanese. But the thing is, I remember listening to Double Toasted at one point, and Corey Coleman actually did suggest something pretty interesting, is that they could have casted one of the girls from Pacific Rim to play as Motoko. And I have to give him that he does have a pretty good point. She actually would look like a really good Motoko. I'll give him that. But on the other hand, I do, you know, honestly, I actually am a lot more opened, and I can definitely see that, like, it's still a great choice to have Scarlett Johansson as Motoko, or in this case, according to IMDb, she's not going to be called Motoko, but just the Major. So yeah, like, I can understand that choice. She really does look like, she really does look like the character that she's based on. And like, even like, believe it or not, the Japanese would actually agree with me on that. And like, even in her execution, it's actually pretty good. And plus the fact that she is a cyborg, you're kind of like, you know, it allows you to be a bit more loose with whatever race you want to be with the character, because technically it's a robot. Like, you, like, it doesn't matter if you make it like Caucasian, African-American, or Asian, or what have you. Like, it's a, like, since it is a cyborg, you're allowed to be a lot more loose with it. And even in her execution, she actually does a really good job with it. So I'll definitely give it that. But in terms of Ghost in the Shell, it definitely seems like the movie, the kind of movie that it will absolutely deliver in terms of the action. Now, I don't know if this is going to be, in the style that it's going to be a bit more Hollywood-like, where it might take away the philosophy aspect of Ghost in the Shell and to replace it with more action and romance and stuff like that. That's probably my biggest worry with this movie, but, you know, at least in terms of the trailer itself, like, it does look like it wants to deliver in terms of the action, and, yeah, like, you know, honestly, it does spark my interest to see what this movie is all about, so I'm actually pretty excited for it. And honestly, if I do have to find a criticism for it, there really isn't much that I could say, but, like I've already mentioned my worry of what could possibly happen with this movie, but the only thing I, like, the only criticism I would have is, yeah, I guess I would say it's just Scarlett Johansson's body, actually. The fact that, like, they just covered it up to be more cyborg-like, and we didn't get any nipples. Life doesn't work that way, folks. Unfortunately, I'm sure you guys really would wish to have a naked Scarlett Johansson, but, you know, you're not gonna get that, you're not gonna get that promise that easily. You know, you still gotta work on it a bit. But, yeah, okay. But anyways, going into the comparison between the two with Beauty and the Beast and Ghost in the Shell, if I could be honest, like, among those two trailers, I would say that I am a lot more excited with Ghost in the Shell than I am with Beauty and the Beast. Because, like I stated before, even though in terms of the writing, the two look like they are going to be very well respected to the original source material, Ghost in the Shell, it looks like it wants to stay more in line with the source material. It wants to be more like the manga and the animated feature film. And, you know, like, you could see a lot of the influences, and it wants to remain that way. With Beauty and the Beast, however, like, they are doing new things, which isn't bad, but the way that they executed is just, there are some things that work and some things that don't. And even, like, in terms of the special effects, like, Ghost in the Shell definitely triumphs over that. Honestly, with Ghost in the Shell, it looks fantastic. Like, the visual effects that they brought upon there, it actually looks pretty cool. But with Beauty and the Beast, the CGI, like, honestly, the visual effects and the CGI, it looks like freaking crap. They, you know, honestly, characters like the Beast, Lumiere, Cogsworth, Mrs. Potts, they look like garbage. They look awful. And honestly, they just tell me that they look like crappy CGI than they do, like, new versions of characters that we've grown to love these past 25 years. And especially the one thing that Ghost in the Shell will always triumph over Beauty and the Beast is the main female lead. It's going to be controversial what I'm about to say, but screw it. Scarlett Johansson as Motoko is a better casting choice than Emma Watson as Belle. Yes, I said that. I said that crap on the Animation Podcast. Now, yes, and honestly, this is why I'm a lot more excited and a lot more enthusiastic about Ghost in the Shell. Now, the thing is, with Beauty and the Beast, it does look like I am promised that I'm going to be given a good movie. But that's pretty much it. I'm just delivered a good movie, nothing more. But with Ghost in the Shell, it looks like it has a lot more potential. It's not just going to be good. It can actually be something awesome. You know, it could be something really engaging. And that's why I feel like Ghost in the Shell could actually be the more triumphant movie. But we will only know which one will truly be the better film when these two movies are going to be coming out on March 2017. Now, for our next story, we're going to be going back to something that I've talked about last week, and it's going to be about The Dam Keeper, the Oscar-nominated animated short that is pretty much turning itself into a pretty big franchise. Now, last week I reported that apparently there's going to be a Japanese animated series of The Dam Keeper that will be exclusively on Hulu in that country. And it's going to be a bit of a mini-series. It's going to be like 10 episodes that are going to be like 5 minutes each. So they're going to be short, but they're also going to be sweet. But there are also some other elements that they want to... that apparently Tonko House wants to, make the series of The Dam Keeper to grow. Some of these things would also include a trilogy of graphic novels made by the people who... made by the guys who worked on The Dam Keeper, which, by the way, is Robert Kondo and Dice Susumi. But also, I subtly mentioned about them making a feature film. It has already been reported a while back, and even though they are in development, like, we just know that they are just going to make a feature film. That's it. But this week, apparently, that feature film is going to be fully going into motion. And what I'm talking about is going to be the collaboration between Tonko House and 20th Century Fox Animation. They are going to be working together in order to create the feature film of The Dam Keeper. So, just to give you, and by the way, just want to give you guys a little bit more of a background. Like, I've already mentioned about the aspects of The Dam Keeper, but when it comes to Kondo and Susumi, beforehand, if you guys didn't know, they were actually once Pixar animators. They pretty much decided to quit their jobs at Pixar when they were working on movies like Toy Story 3, Monsters University, and Ratatouille. They decided to quit in order to go and create Tonko House to go and work on The Dam Keeper, which so far looks like is going very, very well for them. And if I may go into my source here on Variety. Vanessa Morrison, president of Fox Animation, said, "We are thrilled to be in business with Tonko House and honored to help develop their groundbreaking short into a feature." There is going to be, however, a big difference between the animated short and a feature film. The new film will have full dialogue and is intended to be made primarily in CG. Kondo and Susumi are... mentioning the things I've said before, like the trilogy of graphic novels and the 10-episode series of Hulu Japan. But yeah, also I just want to add, however, that there's also this source here. The Tonko House team develop a pitch deepening and expanding the characters and world of the short film. 20th Century Fox Animation executive Darlene Camagno-Lorquette has shepherded and will continue to oversee. Will continue to oversee the studio. Screenwriter John Henry Hinkle, originally brought aboard by Tonko House, has joined the project as well. Kane Lee, an independent producer formerly of Jane Starts Productions and Blue Sky Studios, will produce. So basically, that's the whole thing. Is that now 20th Century Fox Animation has gathered Tonko House and decided to go help them out, not only to make the animated feature, but also to go and distribute it worldwide. So this is going to be like this big thing now. It's pretty much going to be taking the similar steps to movies like Nine and The Nut Job and go and turn that into a movie, which By the way, like, even though that doesn't sound like it's gonna be promising, considering those two movies are honestly not that great, this one, honestly, I am actually pretty enthusiastic about. I am actually pretty excited. I've already mentioned before that I'm actually a pretty big fan of, The Dam Keeper. A fantastic short, and I've even stated that, honestly, that, like, that short should have won the Oscar for Best Animated Short. And, yeah, like, it shouldn't have been that feast thing that Disney made. Like, it really should have been, The Dam Keeper. It really was that good. Now, the one thing I will mention, however, that I'm pretty sure that could disappoint some people is the fact that, for one, they're going to add in, some dialogue, and two, that they're going to make it CG. So, pretty much turning it into any other animated feature film. And, like, some people might see that as lessening the value of The Dam Keeper, like, pretty much making it less than, like, what made the animated short so great. But, you know, actually, what's interesting is that even though they have yet to reveal a cast for it, they actually did put up a picture of the 3D version of the Dam Keeper, and the designs look like they're going to be very respectful to the animated short. And, you know, even though it does have a bit of that simplicity, it actually does look very respectful. I already said that, but it actually does look good in CG, you know? It's not too simplistic where it looks ugly or it looks cheap as an animated feature, much like many of the designs that would come from Sony Pictures Animation. It actually looks nice, you know? It looks, it still retains that spirit of the original design where it does look wholesome, it does look sweet, and it does have a bit of that cuteness. So, you know, honestly, I'm hoping that things can actually work well. But like I said before, usually when it comes to animated shorts that would turn into feature films, rather they be like Nine or The Nut Job, sometimes things don't go well, and in some cases, animated shorts should stay as animated shorts. And and even if it would get an Oscar nomination or not, sometimes it doesn't go well. Like, Nine actually was an Oscar-nominated short before it was ultimately turned into a movie. But the thing is, like, when you do think about The Dam Keeper, in a way, there is a bit of a story. And, you know, if they are going to expand that into a feature film, like, I could definitely see that. It does have a bit of that scale of a feature film, so hopefully, maybe they won't screw it up. And especially the fact that they do have the original directors of Kondo and Susumi returning to direct the movie. You know, honestly, I'm just hoping for the best, and I'm just wishing the best of luck for the people of Tonko House to go and, make this feature film. I'm just hoping for the best, and I'm going to remain optimistic about the project, and I do hope that, they would actually make something in which it would capture the spirit, and especially the heart of the animated short onto the feature film. And that's probably one of the big things that I want to see from this animated feature, if it can capture that heart, because that's the biggest component in the animated short, is that it really does have a lot of heart, especially with the friendship between Pig and Fox. So I'm just hoping for the best, even though we have yet to have a release date or any cast or anything like that. We'll just have to wait and see with how Tonko House and Fox would turn The Dam Keeper into a movie. Now, for our next story, it's going to be a little bit short, but this is something that I have to mention, because if you are an animation fan, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. And honestly, this is something that when I immediately heard it, I was just so hyped up, and I knew I have to jump into it. And what I am talking about is going to be about Fathom Events. If you guys remember, Fathom Events are the same people that would bring in the Iron Giant Signature Edition and also Batman the Killing Joke onto the big screen, making such a big deal over, like, cult favorite or highly anticipated animated features and giving a chance to actually witnessing them onto the big screen. But in this case, this is going to be something like in the levels of the Iron Giant Signature Edition, where you're taking one of the greatest animated features of all time and giving it another chance to be presented on the big screen. And this is something like that. And what I am talking, of course, is actually the highly praised, the highly beautiful, one of the greatest animated features of all time, Spirited Away. Yes, apparently in collaboration, not only from Fathom Events, but also Studio Ghibli, G-Kids, and Hot Topic, Spirited Away will be coming back into theaters for 2 days, for this 2-day special event in honor of the movie's 15th anniversary. However, some of you might be wondering, considering that this is a Japanese animated feature, regarding which version is it going to be? Is it going to be the English dubbed version, or is it going to be the subtitle version? Well, believe it or not, it's going to be both. Where on one day, like on December 4th, it is scheduled that Spirited Away will be the English dub, and then the day after, on December 5th, it's going to be the Japanese subbed version. So at least you will get the best of both worlds. So you will get, you know, it's going to pretty much satisfy everyone, where you got the people who enjoy Spirited Away, and also you got those weird, angry weeaboos who have a passionate hate for dubs, and they think that any English spoken onto a Japanese anime is the freaking devil. So at least, you know, we can it can satisfy everybody. And I remember when I first heard about this special event, like, I immediately rushed onto Facebook and I went to message my friends going, "Guys, Spirited Away is coming. You want to do something?" You know, I'm honestly really excited. And, I know for a fact that Fathom Events is actually something that's not just exclusive to the US, but like, this is also something that they do in Canada as well. So that's why I'm actually really excited. That's why I actually managed to have that opportunity last year to watch the Iron Giant Signature Edition on the big screen as a way to celebrate my birthday, actually. That was, you know, honestly, that was kind of a highlight for me, was actually legitimately watching the Iron Giant on the big screen on my birthday, on October 5th. That was actually really exciting. And now that we do have a chance to watch Spirited Away on the big screen, that's actually really awesome. And honestly, as a moviegoer fan, I feel like this is such a huge, like, I feel like this is an honor that I would actually get an opportunity to go and check out, like, one of the greatest animated features of all time onto the big screen. And this is something that I guess I want to do, like, kind of do as a goal now. Like I want to go and check out many of the greatest animated features onto the big screen when they would get released. I know that, like, in terms of re-releases, like, yeah, like, technically I know that I've already seen, upon its release, movies like Frozen or Zootopia or Toy Story 3 or many of the Pixar films. Like, I witnessed that on the big screen, but that is, like, when they were released in theaters. That's, like, the start of their reputation. Like, I can say that, but when it's a re-release, that actually feels like, you know, something about it, it feels really special. I know I've done that for The Lion King when that was re-released in 3D. I've done that, like I said, for The Iron Giant. And, yeah, I guess now I can soon add Spirited Away. I know for a fact that I'm gonna do this. So I guess, like, I know my life would pretty much be complete if Disney could actually do that again with either Beauty and the Beast or Fantasia. That would be amazing. Or actually, when it comes to Fantasia, what I want to do, I want to see those live concert Fantasias. This is something that sometimes can happen where, like, they would actually show Fantasia on this giant screen and you would have this live orchestra playing the music. That I want to check out. That's like that's legit a bucket list thing that I want to do. But yeah, for now, there isn't really anything else to say, but yeah, Spirited Away is going to be coming onto the big screen, and if you guys want to check it out, just remember that on December 4th is going to be your one-time event that you'll see it in the English dub, and on December 5th will be the time that you will see it in the Japanese dub. Japanese sub, sorry. not Japanese dub. Well, okay, well, technically it is the Japanese dub, but you'll have English subtitles. And so finally, we now have Matt's Pick of the Week. And for this week, I decided that, you know what? We're closing in on 2016. It's soon going to be the end of the year, and soon 2017 will roll along. But for movie fans, that would actually mean one thing. Right around the corner, it's going to be award season. Soon we're going to be hearing all the different types of news regarding stuff like the Golden Globes, the Oscars, the Annies, the Critics' Choice Awards, the SAG Awards, and all that kind of stuff. And often we are going to be hearing about the same movies being awarded again and again and again and again. No matter what it is, it's going to be that time. And we gotta get ready. And even for me, like, considering my journalism job on Filmbook, I gotta get ready for that. But anyways, going into what I was talking about, for now, we actually do have a little bit of a preview of what could be coming up in terms of the Oscars. And the story that I decided to go for Matt's Pick of the Week is that in terms of the Academy Awards, 27 animated features have been revealed to be in submission so that it can have a chance to get a nomination for Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards. Now, I just want to mention that this is apparently a brand new record. This is apparently the most animated films that were submitted to the Oscars for the category of Best Animated Features. Like, if you look at the previous years, some would be 16, some would be 20, but, like, having 27, that's actually pretty crazy when you think about it. But yeah, now I decided, for this one, I want to play a special game, though. Now, even though it's not necessarily as fun trying to predict, who's gonna be the winner among the nominees, because, like, 90% of the time, let's be honest, the winner is going to be the one that starts with na 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 na, even though that technically 90% of the time they do deserve that win anyways. Like, even though it's not as fun predicting the winner, you know, I want to go and play the game of trying to predict of who's going to be the nominations. That's actually a lot of fun and a lot more interesting to discuss about. And you never know who would end up actually getting the nomination. And in a way, getting a nomination is actually a bit more of an honor than getting a win. Because often, since, like, we know mostly Disney films would dominate that category anyways, getting a nomination means that you would actually get some recognition. That would give movies 15 minutes of fame in order to be recognized by the public. Like, I know that there are many films out there like Anomalisa, Song of the Sea, The Secret of Kells, and all that kind of stuff. They're pretty much recognized right now thanks to the recognition that it got recognized thanks to the recognition that it has because it is an Oscar-nominated film. You know, and it's often great. So I decided, you know what? Let's do this. We're gonna work on this together. I actually did a lot of research, knowing what all these 27 movies are, and I decided to go one by one to see, like, which ones we know are not gonna be nominated, which ones we know will be nominated, and which ones could be nominated. And I actually did that all on paper. And even though this is a podcast, you can't actually see me having a piece of paper with it. I actually do have proof. Listen. See? That's a piece of paper. But anyways, let's get down to it and let's begin our little prediction game. And so, the nominees for Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards are The Angry Birds Movie, April and the Extraordinary World, Bilal, Finding Dory, Ice Age Collision Course, Kingsglaive Final Fantasy XV, Kubo and the Two Strings, Kung Fu Panda 3, The Little Prince, Long Way North, Miss Hokusai, Moana, Monkey King, Hero is Back, Mune, Mustafa and the Magician, My Life as a Zucchini, Phantom Boy, The Red Turtle, Sausage Party, The Secret Life of Pets, Sing, Snowtime, Storks, Trolls, 25 April, Your Name, and finally, Zootopia. And those are the 27 submitted animated films who are in competition to go and grab a nomination. And so, let us begin on to going, like, analyzing the list. And let's start off by taking let's take away the ones that we know are not gonna get nominated. Let's start off by getting rid of those so that we can pretty much end their misery. So first things first, we know that in this year, we have several movies that are based on video games, rather they be Ratchet and Clank, The Angry Birds Movie, and Kingsglaive Final Fantasy XV. But let's be honest, they really are not the greatest. In fact, some of them, like Ratchet and Clank, can be considered some of the worst animated films of the year. So that's why I pretty much decided they're not going to get a chance to get an Oscar nomination, so I pretty much took off The Angry Birds Movie and Kingsglaive Final Fantasy XV. Now, the next thing I decided to take off are pretty much the independent animated features that didn't get massive praise. Now, a lot of these are actually very well reviewed, but there are a few of them, however, like they got massive, highly acclaimed reviews that if they don't reach to that level, then chances are they're not going to get a nomination. So that's why I pretty much removed movies like Bilal, I took off Mune, I took off Snowtime, and I also took off 25 April. Now, I just want to mention, however, the first one that I immediately crossed off, knowing that it will never get an Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature, I immediately took away Ice Age Collision Course. There is no way in freaking hell that's going to get a nomination. In fact, it's kind of foolish for 20th Century Fox to even submit that onto the category. There's no way that the fifth freaking Ice Age film where Sid gets a girlfriend would ever get an Oscar nomination. Are you freaking kidding me? But anyways, moving right along, I decided to also take away the ones that were pretty much made in Japan and in China. Because, let's be honest, when it comes to Asian animated features, unless you were made by Studio Ghibli, chances are you're not going to get that nomination. So I decided to pretty much take away Miss Hokusai, I took away Monkey King, and I also took off Your Name. So that's not going to get a nomination. And then I took off Mustafa and the Magician. I decided to cross that off as well. And I'm going to be very honest with you guys. Like, I'm going to be real here. I'm going to put this in the nicest way possible. Out of all the animated films that are submitted on this list, Mustafa and the Magician is the least likely to get a nomination at the Oscars for this category. Like, even more than Ice Age Collision Course. And again, that's the nicest way that I could put it. The only thing I could say is that if you're curious to why, just look it up. Just look up Mustafa and the Magician and you'll see for yourself. You're just going to find out on your own to why it's not going to get that nomination. I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah, I'm just saying that. Okay, but anyways, moving right along, I also took off Sausage Party from the list because here's the thing. Even though I do like Sausage Party and I do consider it the funniest movie of the year, let's be real, guys. Since when have you heard of a Seth Rogen comedy get an Oscar nomination? That's kind of the thing. I don't really see that get nominated. But anyways, the next thing I took off is The Secret Life of Pets. I don't know if it's really strong enough to actually get an Oscar nomination, but honestly, I don't really see it. It's just like there are better animated films that are on this list than The Secret Life of Pets, so I don't really see it like get that high honor. I don't know if I mentioned that I took off Snowtime in 25 April. Maybe I did, but I'm just going to mention that just in case. Like, that's another one of the, like, those two are also in the same category of like pretty much independent films that are not highly acclaimed. So I took off those. Like maybe I already mentioned that, but I just want to repeat it just in case I forgot. I also decided to take away Storks because let's be honest, like as one of those cartoony animated films, it's not going to get that nomination, especially if like it ended up becoming an afterthought. There's no way. And then finally, I also decided to take away Trolls. Now, the one thing I just want to mention is that I took off Trolls from the list because, let's be honest, it's almost unanimously agreed that Kung Fu Panda 3 is the superior DreamWorks film this year. But I would not be surprised if it would actually end off with an Oscar nomination. Not for Best Animated Feature, but if it could actually get a nominee for Best Original Song for Can't Stop the Feeling or something like that. I can actually imagine it happening. I mean, if Despicable Me 2 would actually get an Oscar nomination for the song Happy, then I wouldn't be surprised if Trolls would get a nomination for Can't Stop the Feeling. I'm just saying that right now. So for Best Animated Feature, no. For Best Original Song, maybe. But anyhow, that's pretty much all the ones that I'm pretty sure are not gonna get a nomination. Now let's move on to the ones that we know for a fact are gonna get a nomination. The ones that we are the most confident that will be nominated for Best Animated Feature. Now first things first, let us put in your standard Disney film. Now it's very rare that a Disney movie would actually not get an Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature, but it's usually very common and, you know, it's honestly expected. Like, we know there would be a Disney film in that category somewhere. And in this case, I decided to put in Zootopia. That we can guarantee is going to get that nomination, considering that when it comes to Zootopia, it is a highly praised movie. Many critics and audiences absolutely adored it. And it is a massively successful animated feature. It's one of the two animated films that actually surpassed $1 billion this year. So that's why I can pretty much guarantee you that Zootopia will be on this list. And then afterwards, equally with our standard Disney film on the list, we also need our standard stop motion film. Now, whenever either Laika or Aardman would make an animated feature, would make one of their stop motion feature films, it's gotta get an Oscar nomination, no matter what. Actually, it's not just Laika and Aardman. If it's a mainstream, wide release stop motion animated feature film, it's always gonna get a nomination. Like, even if it's Fantastic Mr. Fox or Anomalisa or even Frankenweenie, it's gonna get it because stop motion has a reservation in there for some reason. And that's why I can guarantee you that Kubo and the Two Strings is going to get an Oscar nomination. And the reason why I say that, even if it's actually not stop motion animated, it's guaranteed to have that nomination either way. It's such a phenomenal film. And it definitely deserves to have that Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature, hands down. And then there is another one. Now, for this one, it can be a bit unpredictable, but this is the standard independent animated feature films. These are the ones that are not made by the big studios like Disney, Pixar, DreamWorks, Illumination, or any of those ones. Now, these are the ones that are lesser known. They would pop up from festival to festival, and, they would have their moment of worldwide fame by getting that Oscar nomination. And the one that I decided to put in, I decided to use The Red Turtle. Not only is it a highly praised animated feature and that it would frequently get a lot of like news buzz around, but the reason why I put it is mostly because of the association with Studio Ghibli. Now, if you look back in recent years, the Studio Ghibli films would often get an Oscar nomination, rather it be The Wind Rises, The Tale of the Princess Kaguya, or When Marnie Was There. Like, they would immediately get recognition at the Oscars. Now, technically, some people would make an exception and they would explain that technically there is a bit of a reason why they would get nominated, not just because it's Studio Ghibli, but because, like, it's kind of like the final feature films of, like, well, people, or should I say, kind of people expected to be the final feature films of, like, Hayao Miyazaki, Isao Takahata, and just Studio Ghibli in general. But honestly, with this kind of pattern, I can imagine that they could also include in The Red Turtle. So that's why I'm putting it as kind of a guarantee. Like, or at the very least, The Red Turtle, among all the independent animated feature film, The Red Turtle is the one that would most likely get that Oscar nomination. And so that would leave us with two empty slots. So we got Zootopia, Kubo and the Two Strings, and The Red Turtle. What is the two remaining spots that are going to be filled? Well, one thing I can guarantee you is that one spot is going to be filled with a mainstream animated feature, and the other one could actually be filled with another independent animated feature. Because if we look back in recent years, like last year and the year before that, we're starting to see two independent animated feature films not associated with a, not necessarily associated with a big name studio that would get that nomination. So at least let's assume that this year as well, we're going to get two independent animated features getting a nomination. So the ones that I put in as a maybe in terms of the mainstream animated feature films that could get a nomination, I put in Finding Dory, Kung Fu Panda 3, The Little Prince, Moana, and Sing. Now, I just want to mention, by the way, that as of this podcast that I am doing right now, both Moana and Sing have yet to be released in theaters. So there is no confirmation if I can fully know if these movies would actually be good or not to get that Oscar nomination. Now, even though with Moana, there is a higher chance that it might actually get a nomination, considering that it is from Disney, and usually Disney would immediately get like a reservation spot to get a nomination. But with Sing, it's really hard to determine. Like, so far, I have heard some good things about it, but I don't know if it's going to be good enough to get a nomination at the Oscars. Who knows? Like, we'll just have to wait and see. That's why I'm pretty much putting Sing and Moana as a maybe as well, because I have yet to see it. And maybe it could actually be really good enough to get an Oscar nomination, but who knows? Now, but I will say right now that, like, a lot of them do have a strong chance. Like, rather if it's either Sing, Moana, Kung Fu Panda 3, or Finding Dory. Because usually Pixar has a good reputation to get an Oscar nomination, especially with Finding Dory. Considering that's another movie, like, similar to Zootopia, that is highly praised by critics. And it surpassed $1 billion at the box office this year, so maybe Finding Dory could get a higher chance. But I would say that among the ones that I put in as a maybe, the one that would get the lowest chance, I would have to say it's hands down The Little Prince. Now, technically, a lot of people could say that, oh, it will get a nomination because it does have some stop motion. But the thing with The Little Prince, I don't know about you, I just don't feel like it's really that, it's really good enough to get that Oscar nomination. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if this is going to be that animated feature that if it doesn't get a nomination, then fans are going to be flipped out. You know, like there would be like this outrage going on. Like, I can understand, like, last year, like, there was a tiny bit with the Peanuts movie, but it was really minor. But it seriously got out of hand when the Lego movie didn't get a nomination. Like, that was, like, to the point that it was just absolutely ridiculous. But, that's pretty much my say on those maybes. But in terms of the independent animated feature films, like, if they would actually select a second independent animated film to get a nomination, the ones that I put in maybe, like, all of them are pretty much highly praised. So, we got April and the Extraordinary World. That one, like, critics loved it. Long Way North, again, critics loved it. My Life as a Zucchini, I heard it was the toast of the Annecy International Animation Film Festival, so I wouldn't be surprised if that could get a nomination. And also Phantom Boy. This is another one that I saw that G Kids is distributing, and apparently this was actually from the makers of A Cat in Paris, which, if you guys don't remember, A Cat in Paris is another animated feature that actually did get a nomination at the Oscars. So yeah, that's pretty much my list of maybes. So overall, if I have to have no choice but to make a full-on prediction of the 5 animated feature films that will be nominated for Best Animated Feature, if I have to do one, I was probably thinking maybe the nominees, my predictions would be Zootopia, Kubo and the Two Strings, Finding Dory, The Red Turtle, and My Life as a Zucchini. Those are probably the ones that that's the ones that I think could get a nomination. Now, even though I am guaranteed that I know for a fact that Zootopia and Kubo will get that nomination, maybe I could be wrong. Again, this is all a prediction. You can leave down in the comments on your thoughts of who could be the who do you think would actually get nominated for Best Animated Feature. This is not just me doing it. You guys can join along as well. Suggest your predictions, you know? Suggest what you think will actually be the 5 animated feature films that will be nominated for Best Animated Feature. So you guys go and have fun with that. But anyways, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is look for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, go and rate and review this episode. That would be very lovely and that would be very nice of you. And also, if you have listened to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.